This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media's Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to speak to Josh Silver, who's the executive director of Free Press. Welcome to Etopia Media's Broadband Over Powerline World.
Thank you.
Your organization put out a press release, or was reported in a press release, with some comments about Texas Representative Sessions, who has introduced H.R. 2726. You've looked into some of his finances. What can you tell our listeners about that, and any ideas you have about the relationship between those financial arrangements he's got and the bill?
Well, Pete Sessions from Dallas is a 16-year former executive with SBC Communications, a big telecom company.
Right.
And he's been in Congress for several years. But what's clear is, you know, the guy owns, well, technically his wife owns over $500,000 worth of SBC stock, and he's introduced a bill that would make it illegal for municipalities across the country to offer high-speed broadband to the public. And make it such that only cable and telecom companies can do it, or municipalities would require their permission. And this is a bill that's archaic. It's supported by no one in this country other than the cable and telephone companies. And the guy stands to benefit when his stock options mature. And the reality is if you're a federal communications commissioner or staff regulating media issues, you're not even allowed to own media stock. And if you're a member of Congress, you are. And so what it shows us is two things. One, Pete Sessions is a poster boy for what's corrupt in Washington and has to change. And two, the ethics rules in Congress are inadequate and have to be reformed, because this kind of conflict of interest has to be stopped.
Would you say this is, from your work with your organization, whether this is an anomaly or run-of-the-mill situation?
Well, look, you know the stats. Most of the senators in the U.S. Congress are millionaires. They are all, if they don't own stock options, which many I'm sure don't in that many companies, they're constantly legislating on laws that deeply affect companies that are giving them huge campaign contributions. So I really think this points to the deeper issue in this country, which is, you know, our democracy is completely broken. Voter turnout's among the lowest in the world. It's a completely corrupt system where lobbyists often write the bills rather than the legislators or their staff. And as long as we have a campaign finance system where money talks and drives the agenda, we're going to have a democracy that doesn't work. It's just that Sessions has gone a step farther by having over $500,000 worth of stock in this company that he's promoting through this legislation, and the fact that the legislation is so incredibly antithetical to everything positive about, you know, our democracy and the notion of bridging the digital divide and promoting fair policy.
Talk a little bit about Free Press. What kind of organization is it? What does it do?
Free Press is a national, nonpartisan organization working to increase public participation in media policy debates. You know, our media is deeply broken in the United States. Journalism has really gone out the window with, obsession with celebrity coverage of Michael Jackson and Martha Stewart. Very little in the way of hard journalism and broad political debate. We've got an increased amount of commercialism. We've got a declining quality of entertainment. And it's all because the media companies are so phenomenally obsessed with profit that they are cutting, even slashing newsroom budgets. They're avoiding political controversy that turns off advertisers. And they're abiding by that adage, don't bite the hands that feed you. They treat the powers that be with kid gloves. And in return, they get very lucrative policy favors from the White House and Congress. Creates a huge boon to their bottom line.
Now, how does the substance of H.R. 2726 fit into this? What's the importance of allowing or not allowing municipalities to offer broadband wireless services within the context of the telephone cable duopoly and the conglomeration and concentration of media ownership?
Well, this issue points to the most crucial issue facing our country, arguably, which is the entire future of communications in America, the entire future of how Americans get information that upon which they make the most crucial decisions of their lives. You know, the fact is in a few years, digital broadband will offer all communications, television, radio, web, telephone, and these guys are legislating their way out of competition and into lucrative situations where every American is going to be paying at a minimum $30 a month for high-speed internet, and more frequently you see it over $40. So essentially, they're terrified that municipalities, libraries, schools, nonprofits are going to offer internet and communications inexpensively, make it like a utility, much like water, sewer, electricity, ubiquitous and affordable, and that ruins their entire business model, which counts on gouging consumers in order to reap billions of dollars in profit.
You've talked about the economic implications, both for the companies and for the consumers. What about the political implications of a concentration and of media power and media access in the hands of the corporations who are already giving most of the money to elect the politicians to make the laws to regulate them?
Well, you know, all you got to do to put this into to really tangible, understandable terms is look back to November 2nd, 2004, Election Day. Those folks who pulled the lever for President Bush were polled by a university of Maryland that showed that over 70% of them had fundamental misconceptions about the president and about the world politics. Over 70% believed there was a link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. Over 70% believed there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Look, I'm not talking about whether you're pro-war or anti-war. The fact is that the American electorate is deeply disengaged from politics and deeply misunderstands the most basic facts about what's going on domestically and abroad. And this is because the media has basically become nothing but an entertainment, profit-generating system where hard news, hard investigative journalism is very rare, hard to find. The vast majority of Americans get their news from television still today. And television news is a joke. They don't run quality journalism. We all know that. And it's even getting worse because we're seeing this proliferation of so-called video news releases and fake news where government and corporations are providing B-roll footage and basically promoting their products and policies, pretending to be news but actually being distributed by a PR firm. So, you know, the media is in deep crisis today, and it's because big media corporations obsessed with profits have taken over the policymaking process, and the Sessions bill probably embodies that more than anything.
Now, is this situation intrinsic to the technology, or could digital convergence make a difference?
Oh, it's amazing. Digital convergence just presents one of the most amazing opportunities in the history of the Republic, truly. I mean, there are technologies being developed around the country that just boggle the mind. Non-profit, open-source systems are being developed at places like the University of Illinois, Urbana, systems that are called mesh networks, where computers hook up to a little card that goes into the computer and an antenna, a small antenna that then creates a web-like mesh network, we call it, system, where computers actually talk to each other. They receive a high-speed internet connection, and then they boost it and pass it on to their neighbor, literally the neighbor next door. And you can create these webs of internet connectivity that that deliver super high-speed internet, about four times the speed of a cable modem, at a fraction of the cost.
Now, presumably, municipalities might be involved in facilitating or providing that in some way, wouldn't they?
Sure, and it's been starting to happen. You saw it happen in Philadelphia about 6 months ago. Philadelphia City Council voted through $10 million for a system like this, and then Verizon and Comcast promptly passed a law in Pennsylvania that makes it illegal for such systems to be put in place, although, they created a waiver for Philadelphia, but the rest of Pennsylvania goes down the tubes. There's been several other states where similar laws have been passed. The good news is thanks to public organizing, 9 out of 12 states over the past year have organized successfully against this type of legislation. And that's why you see Sessions introducing this federal bill, because SBC, Verizon, and the others are concerned as they see that as soon as the public finds out about these egregious bills and organizes even just a bit, they go down in state legislatures. So now they're trying to just do a silver bullet federally to wipe out competition and create a permanent duopoly.
Okay, now speaking of competition on the international or global level, how well has the current policy of duopoly worked in terms of providing the general population of the United States with broadband access? How does that compare with other countries who have different regimes of telecommunications?
Terrible. I mean, the United States now ranks, I believe the latest figure is 18th in the world in wireless internet availability. Places like Korea, Japan, they're way out ahead of us.
And what kind of implications does that have both on the economic side for global competitiveness and jobs and on the political side for diversity of views?
Well, immense, and that's why this is a right-left issue. Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, they all support the community internet position, because the fact is it's in business interests to have access to inexpensive internet, ubiquitous internet, in terms of attracting small, medium, big businesses to communities, to linking up businesses that are in rural areas that currently don't have it. Because the fact is, in rural areas, cable and telephone companies don't provide high-speed internet because it's not profitable. So it has a profound effect there. It also has a profound effect on bridging the digital divide.
How does that work?
Well, we've got, well over half the U.S. population does not have high-speed internet at home. In fact, it's only about a quarter. And it's disproportionately, obviously, the folks who are poor, who don't have the extra income to be able to afford internet, and rural, who lose out. And these kinds of community internet technologies are the solution. And a corrupt policymaking process in Washington and state legislatures is starting to eliminate this very promising technology. And it's up to people to organize and go to places like our website, www.freepress.net, to figure out how to organize and stop this.
Now, one state apparently doesn't have a corrupt legislature is Maine. They passed a law a few days ago confirming the rights of municipalities within the state of Maine to offer municipal broadband. And the interview I did with the woman who wrote the bill seemed to indicate, or maybe it was a news article, said that the price point that they're expecting there is about $14, $15 a month for broadband service. How does that compare with what you were talking about, the duopoly prices of $30 or $40 a month?
Well, it's a lot better, and they can get better. They can get even better than that with time as these systems develop. There's no cookie cutter approach here. There's all kinds of different ways. You also got to keep in mind, though, the state of Maine has a clean money campaign finance system where most of the legislature in Maine and state offices are held by public officials who ran and were elected into office using no private money, no special interest money.
Would you say there's a connection there?
Of course, and there's other states like in Arizona, which coincidentally I ran that campaign to pass that law, but we're finding the same thing, is that when you get the money out of the politics, then the politicians start to act in the public interest. I'd hazard a guess that if Mr. Sessions had not received over $75,000 from SBC for his political campaign, SBC and its employees representing the second highest contributor to Sessions' campaigns over the years, he wouldn't be passing such an archaic bill.
Talk about what you see as the possibilities, given an approach that you favor in this area, and add in the idea of iPod casting or podcasting of audio and video over municipally owned or facilitated wireless networks, and what that might mean for media concentration and politics.
Well, this is not going to solve all of our problems, but the fact is that when we go digital on television, particularly, we're talking about thousands of TV stations available to consumers. Community internet networks create community interfaces where you can watch in real streaming time. Not now, but in a few years, you could watch in streaming time a local town meeting, or a high school play or any kind of community event will be available for people to see through their TVs, through these community forums. You can create others. You can do town meetings through them so that people don't have to, you know, go into town if there's, you know, if there's bad weather or whatever. There's a plethora. You can do art galleries online. There's just you could do local commerce.
Okay, one last question. In terms of the unintended consequences of this bill, is it possible that the community attention, public and media attention even, would be drawn more to the concept of municipal broadband than it has before, and that instead of squelching it, this is going to lead to a dialectical process to an enhanced interest and involvement, and perhaps launching of municipal broadband networks?
You know, it's a good question, and I think that may be the silver lining to this. But the fact is that regardless, there's three things that have to happen over the next few years if we're going to prevail, if the public interest will prevail. Number one, we've got to get pilot sites running in cities and towns and rural areas across the country, getting these community internet sites running so that when we face hostile efforts by the incumbents, we can point to successful versions in red states, blue states, rural, urban, and say this is absurd and here's why.
You're talking about incumbent telecom carriers, not incumbent politicians.
No, I'm sorry, incumbent companies.
Right.
Number two, we've got to block hostile legislation both in the states and in Washington, and that's going to take a lot of educating and organizing. And then number three, we got to make sure that the policy fight in Washington for so-called unlicensed spectrum is creating a set-aside of enough of the airwaves, the public broadcasting airwaves, through which TV and radio signals and wireless signals go pass, that there's going to be enough of that to deal with the capacity required for this many Americans to be using community internet wirelessly. So those three things have to happen, and if they do, it will revolutionize communications in America, and we will have a much, much better communication system for it.
Could you elaborate on what you said about clean money, what it is, where it's in place, who's working on it, and what effect it would have on the policies that you've just advocated?
Well, clean money is the campaign finance reform proposal that passed in Maine in 1996 and in Arizona and Massachusetts in 1998, and has passed in various forms since then in cities and a couple other state legislatures. It's a system where politicians who are running for office or candidates can voluntarily, or sitting politicians, can voluntarily agree not to accept private money for their campaigns and instead become eligible to receive a limited amount of public funds, funds that are not colored by special interest needs or private agendas, and run their campaigns that way. And it's a great system. It's worked very well. The disclaimer is I've worked on these and I've seen them work, and they're exciting. The problem is they're a lot of work to pass. There's efforts in cities across the country to pass versions of it. But there's a lot of organizing to do on that issue.
Now, presumably they could be synergized with more available broadband media access that would allow people to bypass the need to spend most of raise their money to pay for television ads on stations that get federal monopolies in their area and a lot of money from ads and don't do much by way of covering the issues in the campaigns themselves, too.
Absolutely, but that's going to take a long time. But down the road, you couldn't be more correct. I mean, that's true. But, you know, it's going to take many years for citizens to change their viewing habits, because as community internet and the digital transition occurs, more channels become available. It will take some time before people change their habits and go from the standard bearers of television like CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, and start moving towards other alternative channels and networks. But it will happen over time, and the key is to be ahead of the curve and to make sure that the public interest, broad political debate, getting journalism that questions government officials in a real way, that's at the top of the priority list.
Okay, wrap up by telling people who want to get involved in this now and express their views about H.R. 2726, what can they do?
They have to go to freepress.net. That's www.freepress.net, and you'll see everything you want to know about every major media reform issue. And by all means, get involved. In the upper left-hand corner of the page, you'll see a free sign up. You put in your email address and zip code. You get occasional, not frequent, but occasional email updates. Again, freepress.net. That's it.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see what happens as this goes forward.
Great. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.